Mishmash, a weekly conversation where we try to unjumble an important and sometimes under the radar statewide story that affects you. I'm Shayna Roth. There was an election this week, but you might be forgiven if you didn't realize that. It was kind of a small one. There were only a couple millage items on my personal ballot. But some of the elections from this week could give us an idea of what to expect in a very big election next year, the presidential election, and also had some pretty serious repercussions, especially for Democrats. Here with me to break it all down is Gongwer executive editor and publisher Zach Gorchow. Zach, welcome back to Mishmash.
So glad to be here, Shayna.
So I only had a few items on my ballot and no campaigns, but there were some elections with, as I said, major repercussions. And let's start with two mayoral races. They were big because once they start, Democrats will temporarily lose their slim majority in the state house. Talk to us about that.
So in Warren and Westland, the winners of those mayoral elections were state representatives Lori Stone and Kevin Coleman, respectively. They surprised their Democratic colleagues by almost the moment Democrats began their new majority status in the state house, their first House majority in more than 12 years, their first so-called trifecta in state government of total control in 40 years, by saying they were running for mayor of their hometown. And at the time, a number of Democrats kind of maybe in denial, poo-pooed the idea that this could be a problem. But because the Democrats had won a 56-54 majority over the Republicans in the November election, there was the possibility that if both won and then both subsequently had to resign their House seats, the House would drop to a 54-54 tie for probably months until special elections could be conducted to fill the vacancies. And sure enough, both ended up winning, and the Democrats, once those two resign their seats next week, are going to be without their majority until an unknown date, probably in March. We're waiting on Governor Whitmer to formally call the special elections.
This seemed so wild to me when I found out, because Democrats have been furiously trying to get a lot done before they potentially lose their majority in the House, Senate, and governor's office next year. And now they are going to have this period of time, maybe even longer, where they don't have that majority in the House. And it seems like it could be a disaster for Democrats so close to the 2024 election, where they want to be able to say, look at all these great things that we've gotten done. Do they have a plan here?
I mean, they've clearly been aware of it. And I guess you could say, yes, they have something of a plan. Some of it they haven't talked about yet, but one thing that I think factored into their decision in the legislature to adjourn earlier for the year than any time in memory, they're going to formally adjourn for the year Tuesday, November 14th, meaning there will be no more session days, was the fact they could be without a majority in the House and unable to do anything without any Republican votes. So I think they basically said, let's just call it good for the year. So I think what really will be interesting is what happens next year when the legislature formally reconvenes in January. My suspicion will be we will see a lot of committee activity where Democrats will still retain their majorities on the committee, but not much in the way of full passage of bills on the House floor. Of course, the Senate can continue doing its thing. It's just they may not be able to get controversial bills to the governor's desk until the House Democratic majority is restored. But perhaps the House will tee up bills, get them out of committee, get them onto the floor so that when they have their majority again, they're ready to go and push those through.
Talk us through the likelihood of them getting back that majority. Are these two House seats pretty safe for Democrats, or is this going to be a tough race?
These are solidly Democratic districts. I believe both Stone and Coleman won their seats in November 2022 by well more than 60% of the vote. It would take an extraordinary situation for Republicans to win. You'd need the Democrats to nominate some type of fringe extremist type candidate, and then the Republicans would have to nominate an outstanding candidate. And then you combine it, you'd need some type of Republican atmospherics nationally to make this happen. So I would never rule anything out, but overwhelmingly, the Democrats are favored to keep these seats. It would be pretty shocking if they did not.
One interesting trend this election, at least in Michigan, was marijuana proposals and a lot of areas just saying no. Walk us through what happened there.
When Michigan voters authorized recreational marijuana in 2018, that included an option for activists to put on city, township, village ballots authorization for marijuana businesses, stores, dispensaries in their communities, in case their city, village council, or township board wouldn't authorize them. Almost uniformly, since this provision was created, these proposals have gone down in flames almost everywhere. There's probably been a couple exceptions where they were approved, but Tuesday was a continuation of voters rejecting, often by overwhelming numbers, the idea of allowing marijuana businesses in their communities. As many people know, there are a lot of marijuana businesses out there, but in general, that's because city councils, village councils, township boards have approved them. The voting mechanism where voters approve them, that has not gone well. And I believe there were 8 such proposals on Tuesday, and all of them failed.
Is there anything that you can attribute this to, or have any sense of why these types of proposals keep failing?
The folks I know who have been involved with this issue, have their interpretation of this was a feeling that it was the marijuana businesses kind of bigfooting into the community, and that it works better if you're working with the elected representatives to build an ordinance that everyone can feel good about. And there is always this concern that if you go the ballot proposal route, that it's a proposal written by the marijuana industry that doesn't have local buy-in. And thus, there's a fear in these communities, justified or not, that, you know, big weed, so to speak, is taking over. And if I recall, you know, I think it was either in Rochester or Rochester Hills. I mean, it was something like 80% of the voters said no. So it's just a tough haul.
New from the Embedded podcast. Female athletes have always needed grit and talent. But for decades, they've also needed a certificate.
There was chit-chat about, is that really a woman?
And even now, they're still being checked and questioned. Their story is the newest series from CBC and NPR's Embedded. It's called Tested. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Seems with this idea.
What about school boards? Tax increases for schools were almost the only thing on my ballot. I think I also had a millage for the library. How did those do across the state?
So the big thing we were watching were school bond proposals. These are proposals to raise property taxes, to build new schools or renovate new schools, infrastructure kinds of things. Traditionally, voters are very warm and embracing of these proposals. We tend to find roughly 70 to 75, even 80 to 85% statewide tend to pass. They did not do as well this past Tuesday. I believe the final tally was about 55% of roughly 40 to 50 such proposals passed. So that's a much lower passage rate. But I think probably we'll need to analyze this a little more closely. In general, urban areas and suburban areas pass these things almost uniformly. They pass easily, but it's been the rural communities that have been more skeptical toward them. So by that very nature, you tend to see more urban suburban bond proposals and fewer rural ones because it's a tougher haul. But this particular Tuesday, there were a lot of bond proposals in rural areas and they didn't do as well. If you look at the biggest proposals, Grand Rapids, the West Ottawa district out in the Holland area, and a few others, Forest Hills and suburban Grand Rapids, those passed. But it was largely the rural areas that saw them go down to defeat.
Zooming out a bit and looking at Michigan and elections sort of across the U.S., is there anything that we can hypothesize for the 2024 elections?
Well, I don't know that there was a lot to really grab onto in Michigan as far as, you know, what portends for 2024. I know there were a lot of Republicans were very cheered by the recall of the entire township board up in one of the townships in Mecosta County in the Big Rapids area over the tax incentives for the big Goshen advanced battery plants. That's something Governor Whitmer and the Democrats in the legislature pushed hard. But all of the township officials who were recalled up there were Republicans. So I don't know that that translates to really anything of note for 2024 statewide, though I'm sure the Republicans will test that out and see. Certainly nationally, though, you have to look at what happened with abortion as a continuation of the momentum of those who believe abortion should be legal, that they have the momentum on their side. You know, Ohio approved a constitutional amendment legalizing abortion in that state. In Virginia, which had state legislative elections, the governor there had been really pushing, I believe, a 15-week ban on abortion after that many weeks of pregnancy. And not only were they unsuccessful in the Republicans unsuccessful in flipping the legislature to their side, they actually ended up losing the, you know, the legislative control to the Democrats. So that issue still seems to be very much favoring the Democrats. So, you know, the Democrats feel great about that. But I know you've seen certainly the Republicans pointing to some local victories and perhaps in New York, where they've had some gains recently on their side. So, you know, I don't know that there's anything that you could really say, aha, this is, you know, momentum's on one side or the other going into 2024, kind of both could point to some things. But I do think that abortion issue, it was so potent in 2022. The abortion issue was so potent in 2022, favoring the Democrats and hurting the Republicans. There's certainly the momentum seems to be continuing there.
Finally, putting the election aside, there was some big news regarding abortion. Republicans and Right to Life filed a federal lawsuit challenging the constitutionality of the amendment to the state constitution that was passed last year that enshrined the right to abortion into the Michigan Constitution. Zach, tell us about what's going on there.
Well, the lawsuit is filed in the U.S. District Court for the Western District of Michigan. It is challenging the idea that the Michigan Constitution can be amended to take the Michigan legislature out of any authoritative role in regulating abortion in Michigan. There will be a big argument about whether the constitutional amendment actually did that. It does have language in it that talks about what the legislature can do to regulate abortion. But that's the argument, that this was a violation of the First and 14th Amendments of the U.S. Constitution, basically getting into due process, free speech kinds of things. This is a shot in the dark. I mean, look, Right to Life of Michigan, they might as well try this. They don't have legislative control. They don't have the governor's office. Democrats just passed a whole series of bills rolling back a generation of restrictions that Right to Life of Michigan had been able to get onto the books when they had their allies in control of the legislature. And the constitutional language that voters approved is pretty airtight. I mean, we'll get a sense as to how airtight. So, you know, they filed in a district court where all but one of the judges was appointed or nominated by a Republican president. They're in a circuit court of appeals district that is tends conservative. And then, of course, you have a very conservative U.S. Supreme Court. So I think the idea is, we have nothing to lose here if you're Right to Life. We might as well give this a try. I think it's uphill, but stranger things have happened. One of the jokes going around the Capitol last night when I stopped over there briefly was, the Democratic Party might want to consider this a huge in-kind contribution from Right to Life of Michigan that, you know, again, the politics of abortion right now, when it comes to partisan elections, is favoring the Democrats pretty clearly right now. And this just assured, potentially, unless it's quickly dismissed by the courts, that this issue could remain resonant. You know, that the Democrats running for office in Michigan can argue, if you put Republicans back in control, they could, you know, look to ban abortion again. This is what, you know, their allies in Right to Life want to do. So it's an interesting and novel concept that they're testing out in court. And hey, you know, if they get a judge who agrees with them, maybe they get a ruling and the world gets turned upside down.
Zach Gorchow, executive editor and publisher at Gongwer. Zach, thank you so much for joining me.
Well, thanks for having me, Sheena.
Mishmash is produced by WDET, Detroit's NPR station. This episode was produced by myself, Shayna Roth, and Hearn Zagare Jr. Our news director is Jerome Vaughn, and our podcast manager is David Lyons. Our digital team is Dave Kim and Sophia Joswiak, with additional help from Jack Philbrandt. As always, if you listen to this show and want to support it, you can do so by leaving us a review wherever you get your podcasts. Or if you really, really like this show, you can support WDET. Just go to wdet.org/give. Without your support, really, shows like this one and all of the great work that WDET does just would not be possible. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.